Welcome to episode 4 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to what's behind the world of comics for the average comic book fan. Joining us, Toby Cook, David Price, and myself, Ian Levitsine, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. This week, Toby Cook joins us in spirit as his microphone is currently out of order. But instead, we are joined by none other than Little Witch of the Comic Geek Speak forums. That's right, Amy Lip, all the way from the UK, stops by as we talk some comic shops, a little bit of comic book news, and our buy it, trade it, and quarter bin of the week. Here now, the fill-in host of our show, me.
Hey folks, this is Ian Levitsine, and welcome to Comic Timing. I am your de facto host this week, as Toby Cook is out with microphone problems. His headset broke on him, so hopefully he'll be back in 2 weeks, as we're recording two episodes back-to-back here, so this will be episode 4 this week, instead of the usual 4A and 4B, because I will be at a convention all next week. I am going to be at Anime Boston from Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and because of that, I will not be there to record, so we're going to do 4 and 5. Joining me, as always, back from his Florida vacation, the Man of 1,000 podcast, David Price.
How's everybody doing?
Doing pretty well. And joining us all the way from the UK, Little Witch herself, Amy Lith. Amy, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing excellent. Pretty well. How's the weather over there in the UK today?
It's been tipping it down, raining all day.
Ah, well, that English rain, you can't avoid it.
You can if I emigrate.
Well, maybe someday. But until then, you're a Little Witch UK to us. All right, so what we're going to be talking about on today's show, we're going to get some news in, and then we're going to talk some comic shops. Basically, the pluses and negatives of the comic shop, maybe some things that we want to improve on them, and take the case of the UK comic shop versus the American comic shop. But we're going to start things off with some news, mostly the fact that Dan Slott's Thing has officially been canceled. Now, this is a story that a lot of different places have been covering, and I myself am a bit perturbed about this because I have been absolutely loving this series. Now, David, have you been picking up the Thing?
Unfortunately not.
Yes, and you were going to wait for the trade on that, right?
Yes.
Okay, and same with you, Amy?
I flicked through it in the store and thought I'd wait for the trade, so...
Now, that's one of the main problems, though, with comics these days. Because of a lot of people waiting for the trade, you don't really know how many people are actually looking forward to a comic until that trade actually comes out.
Well, because the way I see things sometimes is not that I don't have a trade mentality. I still buy my monthly issues. It's how I buy a lot of my comics today. But I don't... Maybe if... Instead of now that it's already been out for a couple of months and now we have this grassroots movement to keep it alive, if there was... I'm all for a company, a publisher, a creator promoting the hell out of their work before it hits the stands. Make a downloadable preview. Put an insert. Put the first 4 pages in the back of a comic book that you already know that has a lot of a reader, so you get even more eyes on it before it comes out. So if I was more aware of it before it came out, I probably would have been there from the beginning, because it does sound like a book that I would have gone out and bought monthly.
Yeah, it's the same with me. It's like, why not put a simple little page advert, even in the back of the letters page, advertising it in one of their best-selling titles, like New Avengers, where it reaches a larger audience.
Or even, call me crazy, Fantastic Four.
Sure.
Good point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it makes perfect sense to advertise that in the back. That is something that they were doing with Fantastic Four, but not really too much in any of the other books. Just a typical, old-fashioned advertisement. You would see the occasional cover preview for the Thing in the pages of Fantastic Four, but nowhere else. And that's one of the major problems with comics these days. It's really hard to get the advertisements out there. Now, Amy, like reading comics monthly, what ways do you think comic companies might be able to take to advertising their comics? I mean, you want to see them maybe go to the magazines or to the TVs and doing actual like commercials for this stuff?
Personally, being in England, comics are very specialist. You think it's shrinking over there, you have no idea how small it is over here. So the thing is, it would be posters. I've never seen a comic book shop with posters advertising stories. There's a tiny 52 one in the shop I go to, but that's about it. You know, so posters, even just sending out like a couple of sample copy, like a sample copy to different stores so that they can hand it around and just have it like on the desk for people to flick through. Just, I don't know, little things, I'd say.
Well, sometimes the little things are all it takes. Mm-hmm. I mean what do you think, David? What sort of advertisements do you think they should be taking?
Oh, I don't know about... I think commercials would be a decent enough idea, but... And I'm trying to think if I ever saw Marvel have commercials for their comics, and not, like, before a DVD of a Marvel character, but... I could see them on... I could see the commercials, like, on Sci-Fi or, you know, during Kids WB or anything like that. I do believe that they... I do believe that the retailers do get the preview copy a week in advance before the book actually comes out, so this way they can try to bulk up orders. If they flip through it and realize, okay, well, Wolverine's going to be in yet another comic book, let me order another 50 issues. This way, you know, I'll have enough on the shelf. But, I mean, you got to get the promotional information to the retailers so they can talk. The retailers also have to know their customers. If I buy Next Wave and I buy Planetary and I buy Jack Ross and I buy Fell, then why wouldn't that retailer also tell me about Desolation Jones or Black Gas or something like that, where I may not even give it another look, but because Warren Ellis is writing all these, if the retailer knows I'm a Warren Ellis fan, he could tell me about it. So if they're more aware, and they in turn, I mean, not that they're not aware now, but if they make their customers aware, that will help. When an issue number one usually comes out, they will sometimes have a letters page, and it'll be of people that received a preview copy. I'm all for having a preview copy sent out. If there was a list, if there was a waiting list for preview copies, or, I mean, how... If you sign up on Marvel's website or DC's website and you follow certain heroes or characters, could Marvel and DC just use that as a way to, you know, market an upcoming book? Like, I'd hear about Manhunter or Blue Beetle or the book that takes place in prison. Is that Hard Time?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, now those are... Blue Beetle I might look at, but Manhunter and Hard Time I never read. But if DC... sent me an email PDF of, emailed me a PDF of the first few pages of it, they're trying. So why not? I'll read the first few pages and then maybe I'll be interested to pick it up in the store or at least see where the next page is leading to. So there are ways they can do it. I just, you know, and as a fan and hindsight being what it is, you know, you always know what you can do afterwards, but I wouldn't snub or stick my nose in the air over any way a publisher wants to promote or just get the word out of a certain title. And anything that they want to do or anything that they can do, I'm all for it.
Podcasting interviews would be a good idea.
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, any publishers who, you know, want to give us interviews with their top guys, please just email us over at comictiming@gmail.com, and we'd be more than happy to interview them.
You might want to give Dave Gibbons a call because he's... Or is it Dave... Because he's putting out, I think it's him anyway, one David Gibbons or David Lloyd is putting out a new book called Kickback that was published in France originally, in French, and I had a flick through the art. One second. See, this is where my mind's going all squiffy on me. Who was it that did V for Vendetta artwork?
That was David Lloyd.
There you go, it's David Lloyd then, because his art is all pastely, and so I flicked through it, and it's definitely something I'm picking up. But it's just the thing that he had it on his table at a convention, and he put like little flyers into each of the convention packs. So that's another way of getting it out.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. And I mean, you know what? It's the interaction that's so important. You know, I mean, when you go into these comic shops, if you just go into a comic shop, get your books, and leave, that's not nearly as effective as if you go into a comic shop, are able to have a conversation with the guy behind the counter, you know, who, you know, gives you your books monthly, you know, you strike up a rapport, he puts into your pull list, you know, things that you might want to pick up monthly and all that. And it's as important for the companies to go out there and maybe tell the comic book shop owners, hey, if you have somebody who's picking up this book monthly, you might want to suggest this and this and this to them, which is something that the comic book companies might want to go out there and do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually just suggest titles to the owners as much as they suggest it to the readers.
Mm. I'll get on to reasons about comic shops suggesting things later. Well, I might as well say it now. One of the things that's annoying me is I'm a big follower of most of the Batman titles, but I pick up Batman, not Detective Comics. Don't know why I just started picking up Batman. Well, 1 year later starts up, Batman and Detective Comics are doing their mega crossover, where the part one's Detective Comics, part two's Batman, part three Detective Comics, and so on like that. My comic book store didn't put me in Detective Comics, so I've had to hunt down all the issues that I missed before I picked up on it. And that first 1 year later one, I've had to pay above cover price for it because it's sold out in England.
Yeah.
Is you can't get it for love nor money.
And they are, that has gone back to repeat printings, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's gone back to repeat printings, and it's pretty much the first printing is almost as impossible to get here as it is in the UK or anywhere at this point. It's like everybody gobbled it up at first sight, and every comic shop I've gone to has, like, no copies left of that first printing.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
See, and I didn't, because I wasn't reading them before Crisis, I didn't feel the need to pick that up or Superman up. I'm still only buying the comics that I want to read. I still read Titans and Outsiders, but even though this was some big event, you know, whether they lost it on me or not, I didn't feel the need to have to run out and buy every 1 year later book that started to come out. So
neither did I.
Yeah. Well, me neither, although I have been trying some of the new books. I know I'm spending way too much money on comics now because I know that, like, I've been picking up way too much of the 1 year later stuff, especially stuff that I haven't read before. But still, there are some books that, in general, I'm not going to pick up. But, David, if your comic book shop owner were to put, like, or at least suggest some new comics to you that, you know, or maybe tied into some of the books that you already read, would you take that suggestion to heart and maybe pick up an issue or two and see if you like it and maybe from there pick it up regularly?
I would flip through it. See, thankfully, because of my hours, I can't get to the comic shop before the weekend. So if I, you know, comics come out on Wednesday, if he pulled something for me that I won't be able to get to till the weekend, and that gives me a couple of days to get a feel for, you know, what other people are saying, if I can get the general consensus of how everybody is reacting to this particular book, then, yeah, you know, I just might go ahead and decide to buy that first issue or two. I'll definitely flip through it. If I don't think it's for me, I'll tell him and I'll say thanks, and I'll hope he'll continue to do that, but I don't think I'd feel the absolute need to say, okay, well, you went out of your way to pull this for me. I'll spend my $250, my $299 on it, and, you know, thanks. So I'd be real appreciative of him, I'm not going to lie, but I don't know if that would guarantee me 100% that I'd be leaving with the book.
Okay. But that sort of interaction is still something that you'd like to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely. What about you, Amy? Obviously, you know, it would have been nice if your comic shop, you know, actually put those detectives in there. But in general, if there were comics that maybe you hadn't thought of before that all of a sudden you either ended up in your pull list or were suggested to you by your comic shop owner, I mean, would you take that as a positive or as a negative?
Positive. Me being that, when I used to go in and say, suggest me a superhero comic, they used to suggest a couple of things. And I'd generally buy one issue. If I got a feel for it at all, then fine. If not, I've wasted a couple of quid. But at least I know that they're, like, paying attention to what I like. And they did that. They noticed I was reading Desolation Jones and loving it, so they suggested Fell. They haven't been doing that anymore. For the past 3-4 months, it's like the interaction has gone completely downhill. And no real reason for it. They've never really been one to put stuff in my pile and say, look, we pulled you this out. But they used to say, oh, have you had a look at that over there? And that's why one of the reasons that I am changing to online, because if I want interactions about things to read, I'm getting it from Skyping and the podcast, because I'm just not getting it from a comic book store anymore.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's a problem there, you know? I mean, these small little mom-and-pop shops aren't really going to be able to keep it up unless they do have that interaction, because it's so easy to just go online and make your orders these days, or at least have interaction with people that you know online, as opposed to going into the shops and getting that same interaction. This is what the Internet's done, you know? I mean, we're having this conversation right now. I'm in Brooklyn, you know, Amy's in the UK, and David's in upstate New York. None of these conversations will be happening. We'd have to have our conversations at the comic shops without the Internet.
Right.
So it's how powerful that sort of thing is. And I think the comic shops and the comic companies need to realize this. And I'm glad to see that DC and Marvel are having their own podcasts now, but it would be nice to maybe have you know, some sort of suggestions going into your mailbox, like you suggested earlier, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's something that they would want to maybe touch on. Now, Spider-Girl, another one of the comics that is going to be canceled. This one almost took advantage of the fact that it was going to be canceled. About, like, 8 times it was going to be canceled, and all of a sudden, on second thought, nah, maybe not. And this thing, it's going to last until issue 100, and possibly even a bit longer than that. Tom DeFalco has been hinting at the fact that they might restart the thing. Now, speaking of the thing, would you like to see the thing restarted? Do you think that maybe works for a book? Do the restarts actually help the book, or would you rather just see issue 12, issue 13, issue 14?
Go ahead, Amy.
I'm going to go on the side of, I like to see the numbers carry on. Best example is Astonishing X-Men. They did 1 to 12. I don't know the length of time between 1 to 12, but now they've started doing 13 and 14. Seems like a completely different storyline. Things haven't changed that much, but you know that time's moved on a little bit. But so they've picked up. People then can go back, look in the comic book store and say, where can I find issues 1 to 12? They get handed a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find much easier, because I put more faith personally in books that have been around a long time and have kept their numbering than books that constantly restart.
I would agree with that.
That's a good perspective. I didn't even think about that. I mean, I am a fan of continuing the numbering. I don't like always seeing new number ones, even if it's the same creative team. Everything is the same about it, and all we're doing is just, you know, cashing in on that whole new number one mentality that kind of put us into hock a years back. But it makes a lot of sense, and it seems to just flow naturally that somebody would. You know, somebody would look at the racks and go, okay, well, here's Detective, you know, number 619. Well, obviously, this is a title that's been around for many, many years. And, oh, look, here's, you know, another X-Men comic, number 3. And, well, I've heard of the X-Men, but I don't know why this only has 3 issues before this. And you know, where am I going to... I'd rather have something a little bit more established. So I definitely see Amy's point of view there.
What I'd love to see on comics would be like a little symbol if it's a new arc. Like, DC have a symbol, Marvel have a symbol, and if it's like a long-running comic, like Uncanny X-Men, like Batman, if a new arc starts and then just have like a set symbol so that a new comic book reader can go in the shop and shop, and then the person can say, need any help? And they're like, no. And there'd be just like a sign up saying, this symbol means new arc.
I like that.
Then people know where to start.
And what I know this, I know they do this for the Punisher, for the Max title.
Mm.
It always says the name of the story, part 3 of 6, part 4 of 6. So you always know. So that helps me when I finally sit down to read my Punishers. I read them, even though I have the single issues, I read them 1 through 6. I don't read it monthly. So I kind of read for the trade, but I still buy my single. So at least the Punisher, I know, okay, well, if this is the 4th month, I have 2 more months before I have to worry about reading this particular story. So
is that inside the comic or on the cover?
It's usually on the cover.
Yeah.
On the Punishers, it's almost always on the cover, which is a shame because of the Bradstreet covers, but I know that they do that. I mean, Spidey really doesn't. The Marvel Knights 4 comic, before they had their changeover, they used to have how many parts, 1 of whatever, on the cover. But my only problem with that is knowing how many parts are in this story. I love the idea of, you know, new story direction, new story arc, you know, get in now. I love that idea. Even if the retailers, when the comics are on the shelves, putting a little tag, even if the publisher doesn't, maybe the retailer can go ahead and say, you know, new story arc, great jumping on point, something like that. My only concern about, you know, knowing how many parts are in a book is that it perpetrates the stereotype that they're writing it to be collected. They're writing it for the trade. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just jabs me just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If you guys remember, back in the 90s, Superman comics had a little symbol on them that said what number of the year.
Right. Well, yeah, it had the year in the Superman shield. It had the year and then the number underneath it, 1 through 52, so you knew, because they were out weekly. You had Adventures, Superman, Action, and Man of Steel. So this way you knew which one came out that week. You knew in what order to read them because they did all. It was like Superman had a weekly comic book for, you know, the year, so that made sense. And you're right, it they had the number. That would be nice. After Heroes Reborn with Fantastic Four, when they returned, and even Spider-Man in the most recent Amazing Spider-Man relaunch, they were all renumbered, and recently when they hit their big milestones, when Fantastic Four made it to 500 monthly issues, and I think the same thing with Spider-Man, Marvel went ahead and changed it to go from, like, issue 76, and then the next month, the previous month was, like, issue 75, and then the next month was issue 500, because in actuality, 75 was $4.99.
Yeah.
So that's just that whole little numbering system thing going on the cover. But, no, I agree with where you were going with that, Ian, with, you know, put a number on the cover away from how, you know, the issue number, but at least if without anything big or gigantic or distracting you from anything else going on the cover, you kind of know where this might fall into place where along the greater story.
Definitely. I mean, I would certainly agree with that. And I mean, it's something that really, I mean, it's not like it's going to take away from the cover or anything like that. If anything, it's just going to add to the amount of people that go up to it and say, hey, wow, this is issue number one of an arc. That makes perfect sense for me to pick it up right now. Mm. I mean, it's so often where I've completely avoided a copy of something because I don't know whether I'm going to be picking up something that is the beginning of an arc or issue 5 of 12, you know, and I don't want to get in the middle of the story.
Right.
I mean, I want to make sure that whatever I'm reading makes sense in the scheme of things. So it's something that they're going to have to work on. But going into our main topic of the day, comic shops, obviously, since we were talking a bit about them before, it makes sense to start talking about them now. We all go to them. We all love them. And there's some parts of them we don't like. But we're going to talk about that. Let's start off with you, Amy. You just talked about switching over to the internet as your main medium. But first, give us some of the positives of a comic book shop.
Positives of a comic book shop. Well, I only frequent three, and one of them I love to bits, and that's because I know the people in there and they know me. I can walk in there and say hi, and apart from them not recommending stuff anymore, I know them. Also, you can flick through the issues. You can go in there and you can actually physically hold the issues and see by looking at the cover and the interior art if you want to buy it. Also, it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of it's a little of a social thing because there are a couple of people in there. Except I have my issues with the whole social thing at the moment because I seem to be attracting more attention than ever to myself by being a girl in a shop. So, mm-hmm.
Well, that's one of the main issues there. I mean, you should just be treated as another individual. You know, I mean, not anything special about you being a girl. You're a comic fan. You're a comic fan. That's it. You know, I mean, a lot of the people who go into shops around where I am, if they see a girl, all of a sudden they're, you know, their eyes bulge out. Like, what are you doing here? You're a girl. What the hell?
Well, that's what it's like in one of the stores in Nottingham. I have had them come up to me and ask me if I was lost. And I go in this quite regularly, this shop regularly, because it's a good place for supplies. It's reasonably priced. I've had them ask if I was lost. I've had them talk to me like I'm an idiot. I've had them not look at my face at all, which is really off-putting. The people in the store I go to are really good. They've got a girl working for them, and she's lovely, and we have a great laugh. It's the customers who look at me like I should be hiding over by the manga section. No offense to anyone who likes manga, but it's a common misconception that if I work in a women's clothes store, so I have to dress like a woman. I have to wear a dress. So if I go in on the way to work and I'm wearing my red spotty summer dress, the looks I get in when I go in and go straight for the vertigo section.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. I can just imagine, because even if some of the shops I go to where there is a girl behind the counter, the girl behind the counter doesn't nearly get as much attention as the girl looking through the latest trade paperback of Transmetropolitan.
Yeah.
You know, which makes no sense at all. David, give us some of the positives of going to a comic shop.
The like-minded mentality. I mean, you're all there for a reason. It's not like...
Yeah.
It's not like it's a supermarket where everybody's going to be there, but, you know, they need groceries, but you might be over in the health and beauty aisle. I'm in the frozen food section. If I'm in a comic shop, it's because I like comics. You're here because you like comics. No one is there because they don't like it. So you have that mentality that, okay, well, you know, I'm one of you or one of us and everything's great. And okay, the only times that might cause a problem is, you know, if they give you that look like you're picking that up or you read that. So those people I can avoid and stay away from. But for the most part, just knowing that I'm in a place where I'm accepted more or less, but I can get along with the people that are in there. If I have a question about something, generally it can be answered. And if it's not answered by the person behind the counter, maybe somebody else in the store at that time can answer it. And just from my point of view, because of where I live, there are a lot of small businesses, privately owned, you know, liquor store, hardware store, like the libraries down the street. I like the small community I live in, and I enjoy knowing that I can give my money to a small business owner. I'm putting it back into the community. So I also like that perspective of it. Plus, the comics get there weekly, so if I can get there weekly, then I can try to be more up to date on what I'm reading as opposed to the way I've been always. I used to get my comics when I could, so that would be, you know, months would go by before I'd get to read the latest issue of Fantastic Four or, you know, Wolverine or anything like that. So having it close to the house is another benefit, at least of my comic shop. So knowing that I can get there on a regular basis, knowing that I can get information. The comic shop that I'm going to now has... The owner has an email address. I emailed him the other day, and I asked him if he could get me Cobb off the leash number one, which is supposed to arrive in the stores on the 31st. So he put the order in for me, so I'll have that waiting for me when it hits in. And then in the latest previews, I think number three is there, so he's going to get me number two next month, and then I'll start ordering number three on. I asked him if he could, knowing that he's at a shop that I can get too. I asked him if he could fill in a couple of gaps from some issues that I have, like some Captain Americas and Supreme Power. He's going to get those for me, so and I can get in there and get them when I can. So having that also is a huge benefit to me, I think.
Well, definitely, without a doubt. And that's another thing that I found. A lot of the shops that I go to, obviously, you know, living where I do, there's some shops I go to that are the small mom and pops, and then there's other shops that I go to that are more of the big conglomerates that have, you know, 12 stores or something like that. Midtown Comics, for example. Midtown Comics. Everybody knows Midtown Comics who lives in New York, and some people who don't even live in New York know of Midtown Comics. The fact remains that Midtown Comics is this huge store where it's hard to get a rapport going with anybody behind the counter, because it's just that there's so many people coming in, day out, that, you know, you're just another face in the crowd to them. And what I like about my local shop, Bulletproof, that I go to regularly, and even Cosmic Comics in the city that I go to, is that when you go there, they know who you are. You can go in there, you can strike up a conversation with them, and they'll actually know what you're looking for before you're even looking for it sometimes, which is a great benefit.
That is.
Yeah.
I tell you, I wouldn't be doing online comics if I could live in Bristol, because there is an amazing comic book store that's a chain, Travelling Man, but it tends to have the same employees all the time. So I went in there in January when I was visiting Spider-Fan on the CGS forum, and I went back in there when I went to the convention, and they remembered me, which was really, really nice, because I stayed for this late night thing and they remembered me, and that was nice. And it's so light and airy and well organized. You walk in and you've just got rows of comics. Everything's marked out as in this month's, this week's, previous issues. Then all your back issues are on one side. And it's just got lovely large windows, so it's not so dark and scary. And even Jeff Johns says that there's just no comic book stores like that near him, where everything's so well organized and just nice.
That I'll is nice. It. Yeah.
I'll take it. That's it. I'm taking a trip out to England just to go there. Wow. that sounds better than eight or nine of the comic shops I go to around here. What about the people who frequent the comic shops? Now, I know that there's this stigma of the comic book guy from The Simpsons that we're all like that, which is bull crap. We all know that. You know, everybody's different. But what's the ratio between people you can talk to and people that creep you out where you want to stand about 8 feet away from them and they smell like they haven't showered in 2 weeks?
The shop that I love, which is in White Plains, which is close to where I used to live and close to where I work that I can't get to too often. I love the owner there. I love the manager there. I love the shop. It's not just like the shop in Bristol that Amy mentioned, but it is close to it as far as the way things are laid out and organized, and they're there to answer a question, and everybody is great. But there, some of their customers... Yeah, you really can't get near even with a 10-foot pole. And I don't know why, because it's not like... It's like in the heart of White Plains, so there aren't too many ball fields, basketball courts, or gyms or anything like that nearby. I don't know why, you know, you just would have some severe BO, for just lack of a better term. Everybody there is pretty much quiet. They keep to themselves. But no, I haven't seen too many of the... stereotypical comic book fans in that store. The new store is very small. It's got four walls. It's got a window next to the cash register where the manager sits. There, obviously, he's there to sell sporting goods and memorabilia. It's cards is in the first part of the store. It's Mayapak cards and comics. So comics, I guess, could sometimes be thought of as an afterthought there. Their back issues are in short boxes along the floor. And if you need something, if he doesn't have it in the store, he'll be able to get it for you, like he is with me with a couple of my back issues. So, you know, I think as far as comics go from his store, you get your comics based on, you know, if you have a subscription. So that's where he gets that business from. But the first time I was there, nobody else was in the store. It was just me and the manager. Today I went in, there were a couple of kids. I think they were going over some sporting cards, some baseball cards. But they were, you know, they looked like the normal average. One guy looked kind of preppy, but everybody else was just, you know, average, normal-looking Joes. Nobody was pimply-faced or severely overweight or kept pulling up their pants. It was just it was a nice environment. Everybody was very cordial to each other. And even in White Plains, everybody seems to just be themselves. Nobody is just, it's not like if you were following this person, you wouldn't think, oh, he must be going into that comic store. He could have been going into the record store. He could have been going into the salon. He could have been going anywhere else.
I'm actually glad to hear that because, oh man, you know, I mean, you wouldn't believe how often I know people who read comics, and as soon as you say the word comics, the next person who's sitting next to you is like, you read comics? But
I get that.
Exactly.
Well, you would.
But why? What's so different about me reading comics to any of you lot? You know, there is female characters in comics.
Yes, there are.
And yes, they're scantily clad, but that's besides the point.
because I don't know if it's just because of that damn term fanboy. You don't hear too many fangirls.
We don't hear that over here.
You don't hear the term fanboy at all?
The first time I heard fanboy was Mallrats.
Okay. So then it is an American thing then. But so do you think then the male-female ratio for comic fans is very similar in the UK to the way it is here? Or do you think there are more, or is it more equal, or?
No, there's definitely more guys. It's just, I think the general people, it's like you get a lot of the goths out there over here.
Yeah, okay, yes.
So you get, there's a lot of people who wear black and listen to heavy rock music who inhabit the comic book stores.
Well, they're going to the Sandman section, so.
I read Sandman. And I wear pink, and on occasions I wear dresses. So,
oh my god! Well, no. I mean, no. Well, see, it's funny you should say the goths, too, because that's more the record stores around here. The fact remains that it doesn't matter what the hell you look like, you can be a comic book fan. You're allowed. You have permission.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one of the main problems with, I don't know whether it's just a societal problem or whether it's just, you know, the stigma that's associated with these things. Like, well,
I blame the Simpsons.
Okay. Really? Okay. Okay. See, now, but the same thing can be, you know, if you're a girl and you can fix a car, if you're a girl and you like football or baseball, it's just like, you know, there are just some things that, you know, in the 50s and 60s, I think, when boys and girls were growing up, boys had either G.I. Joes or they had their Tonka trucks, and the girls had their Easy Bake Ovens, they had their Barbies, and it's just, we haven't gotten away from that. Even though we've grown in other areas, we just still think that, you know, certain things are for boys, certain things are for girls, and it's rather sad.
Mm.
It's something that's really not going to be able to be shaken unless like this major societal shift happens in the next, you know, 5 or 10 years. Comic books will be associated with guys, and, you know, Barbies and all that stuff will be associated with girls, even if there are girl fans out there, which is it sucks. It does. I don't think you have to blame The Simpsons too much, although I can understand where you're coming from with that, Amy, but that stereotype existed long before The Simpsons.
Not, I'd say it's safe to say, but not over here.
Okay.
Which I think there we've got the transatlantic thing. The Simpsons was the first time, in a way, comic book guy, that image became, well, known. Before then, to be honest, we got comics in our local paper shop down the corner, which were British reprints, which were 6 months late from American direct sales comics, because I can remember seeing them there. Or, because I grew up in a naval town, all the families that were based in America would send them back to kids over here, which is also how I remember reading them. So it was generally along that way. So it was The Simpsons over here when I first remember seeing that depiction of a comic book guy.
Worst comic shop ever. Now, what about some suggestions that might be able to benefit the comic shops a bit? I mean, obviously, you know, we've talked about the positives and the negatives here. What sort of changes would you like to see in your local shop in the next couple of years?
Better ordering.
Okay.
They don't really have a set system of how the singles get put out, and I would like brand new titles, one shelf, preferably in alphabetical order, unless it's kind of like Vertigo, where they've got... Or the subject matter is parental guidance, six mature themes only, and then possibly move those over, because I know of a couple of kids that have gone in there and you're just thinking, oh, please, God, do not let them pick that up. So, you know, better organising, just so everything's seen. Brighter colours, because the comic book store I go to, it's very black and it's very heavy.
Okay.
I've seen that problem in local shops around where I am also. I mean, it's almost as if, like, for some reason, they think because they're a comic shop, they need to make it so that you can't look inside. You know, they're afraid of what people are going to say about the people who are shopping there. So they need to, you know, make the windows impossible to look out and have covers, which just makes no sense. I mean, you want people to come in, and they're not going to come in if it looks like it hasn't been cleaned in, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
What about you, David? Maybe some changes you'd like to see in the shop.
Well, personally, deeper discounts, but that's just me. Well, no, it might not just be me, but I don't see that happening. So that's
give us money back, or we don't like an issue.
Hey, yeah, we'll just, you know, we'll continue that devil's due offer with the rip offer, where you rip off the cover of a comic and send it to them. It's hard because I am kind of because I'm frequenting more. Frequenting one now, but I still have ties to the old one. And on Wednesdays in White Plains, they have two tables out. All the newest titles from the week are on these tables. All the back issues are still, you know, they have like the past 3 or 4 months worth of back issues along the wall. Anything older than that is getting ready to be boxed. And I like the way they present the new issues and how even the last few months worth of issues are easy to obtain. I haven't been to the new shop on Wednesday or new comic book day, so I don't know how he might have those days set up. Today was my second day in there after emailing him a few times, and I went in, I saw him, pulled the books out for me that he had in my folder, and you know, we didn't chit-chat or anything because there were a couple of people in the store, so he had other things to do, and it was about 20 minutes before they closed anyway, so I wasn't taking up any more of his time. But I do think that as far as comics go, he needs to present the, again, and he may, there's a table in the middle of the store that has that has sporting good stuff on it. You know, maybe on Wednesdays he does put those books out there on that table. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he does. When you first walk into the store on your left, you have a couple of Free Comic Book Day comics from this year and a couple of years past. You have some of the Marvel 25-cent books from a while ago, like the Hulk and a Spidey one, and I think an Uncanny X-Men, which I believe might have been written by Chuck Austin. So he's got some, it's nice that, you know, as soon as you walk in, some of the comics you see are either free or marked a quarter. So it's a nice little way to kind of reel the customer in. Granted, as soon as you spend 50 cents for two comics and then you ask, you know, well, what's the latest X-Men comic like? And then you see the $2.99 cover price, then, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to run away screaming. And then he's got previews, he's got some magazines, he's got a Wizard, a CBG, and I mean, it looks like he's dabbling in a bit of everything. He's got mainstream, but he's also got some indie stuff and on that shelf there. But, you know, he's a friendly guy. I don't know if he's the only person that works there, so if he's got a staff, I'll have to get to know them. In White Plains, it's just Irene, who owns it, and Bishop, who's the manager, and then I think they have another person that works there from time to time. But Bishop knows what he's got on hand. Irene knows her stuff. She got me to buy the first two Preacher trades. She got me...
Good woman.
Yes, she is. She got me into 100 Bullets. She actually gave me the first... Well, she had them next to her. I got Fell 1, 2, and 3, and it was a first printing for number 1. So she handed that to me. So we always can chat about... She likes a lot of the off-the-wall creators. I mean, I believe Joseph Michael Linzer is a friend of theirs. Her and her husband, who passed away a few years ago. Linzer, I believe, has been to this store. Mark Teixeira, I met for the second time at their store, and Ray Lago, who's a painter, we were all there. They were there. Tex and Lago were there. Irene, Bishop, and a lot of the store's customers were there when we had a little memorial service for Morris. And then me, two other customers, and Tex and Lago went to Outback afterwards and had some dinner. So that's always going to keep Comic Book Heaven at the top of my list. They really can do no wrong, as far as I'm concerned. If you want to know what a comic book store can do right, I say look at what Comic Book Heaven does. So I really have to finally answer the question. I really do not know what a store can do for me to make it better.
Okay. Well, if there's one thing that I can basically say that they should improve upon, there's only one of the shops that I go to, and that's Cosmic Comics. Again, probably my favorite shop, but I don't get out there often enough. One thing that they have that other shops don't is a sense of humor. And I say that because almost every single week they have their picks of the week, and there's usually some sort of blurb on the bottom of that pick of the week, something along the lines of, like, let's say if it's a Fallen Angel book, it'll say, you know, pick of the week, Fallen Angel number, let's say 5, oh, look, another Peter David book, you know, or you know, pick of the week, Civil War, Abraham Lincoln's not in this issue, you know, or something along those lines. And I love that about that shop, you know, somewhere where it's almost fun going through the racks and picking up the latest issues of the comics, you know, where you know that you're going to have a good time walking around the shop and almost giving it an experience, as opposed to just you walking in there, picking up your weeklies, and going out, which is a problem with some of the shops around me. So get a sense of humor, folks. It helps out a lot. And it's another reason why I keep going back to Cosmic.
That's something they lack over here, it's safe to say. It's like, they have been said, oh, we don't... when I asked if they were going to go CV, they're like, oh, we don't discuss comic book films in the store. And it's like, just lighten up, you know. If I hated it, fine. You know, just accept it like that and then slag me off when I go. I don't care. Yeah. Just, you know, smile, laugh. You know, comic books are sometimes called funny books. Well, stores yes. be nice
That's exactly what I was just going to say, too. But you're right. I mean, you know, if they walk around like it's a museum or these things are up for auction,
exactly.
Then, yeah, that's an atmosphere that sounds a little stifling, and So, like you said, Amy, are you going to be going exclusively online, or are there things that you may still run to the store to get?
I'll still run to the store, like if there's a new run coming out or a new site that I'm not sure on, I'll still go to the store for that.
Okay.
And I'll definitely still go to the store for the trades because they have an amazing selection of trades. And they really do know their stuff when it comes to trades. It's like if I go in and say, right, I liked the run of Hush in Batman. What else can you suggest for me? They'd be able to pull off different trades.
Okay.
But it's just the singles, and money is also a big issue.
Sure.
Well, that's a good way to go also. And another thing that I was going to mention was the fact that a lot of the shops I go to don't get in enough trades. I mean, the Bulletproof, my local shop, is pretty good with getting they're more of a DC Marvel shop, not too many independents. Mm. Like, they'll have the Image Comics, and they'll have a couple of IDWs and a couple of Dark Horse, but... No, barely anything other than maybe like the big Devil's Due comics. It's very hard to get other independents there. And the trade paperbacks, there's like four or five trade paperbacks in the corner. That's it. And it doesn't help me when I'm trying to pick up a run for any sort of comic, and I have to go through the back issue bins to find it. You know, I'd like to find that trade paperback right in front of me and just be, oh, here's issues 1 to 12 of Astonishing X-Men. I can pick that up now.
Okay.
Which is a benefit. It really is. But
yeah.
Then, of course, there's also... And another thing, Amy was talking about the comic book movies. One of the shops near me, well, my main one also, Bulletproof, they have a booth, and it's actually where I got my Frank Miller Daredevil trade paperback. That's Born Again, right? With
Mazzucchelli?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I actually got that. They had a booth set up at the Fantastic Four movie. When I went at the movie theater, they were selling comics, they were selling T-shirts, they had a couple of trade paperbacks of Daredevil, X-Men, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, all the recent movies that had come out, and that's where I picked it up. I saw my guys there. I'm like, "What, Hank, what the hell are you doing here?" And you know, he told me, we have a booth here, and we do a lot of business here, which is a benefit of that. You know, embrace these comic book movies and make it realize this is a great way for you to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. See, and promotion is a whole other episode, but that's great right there.
Definitely, without a doubt. So, any final thoughts you guys have on the comic book shops that you want to mention?
No, I think I've most probably ranted enough.
Yeah.
I'm going to start becoming the Jamie D.
Yes.
I won't make the obvious comment. Anyway, let's switch it over then to Buy It, Trade It, and Quarter Bin, which we have not done since episode 1, so it's about damn time we do one. All right, let's start it off with the guest, and that, of course, would be Amy. Amy, what is your Buy It, Trade It, Quarter Bin of the week?
I have Desolation Jones, issue 6, and this is the Trade It. Wait for the trade. Anyone who likes Alice will not be disappointed, but it's just finished its first arc, and it was unsure whether it was going to be a limited series or if it's going to be continuous, and it's going to be continuous, but just pick up these first 6 issues in a trade so that you can really get a grip. I don't know if you want me to do a description of it.
No, by all means.
Sure.
Basically, it's a UK CIA agent, well, X, who obviously had some sort of weird, horrific test done to him. And due to fallings out and being drunk, he gets shipped off to LA to live out the rest of his life. And he runs into people where the FBI and all the American secret services have done tests to people as well. So then they all have this little community in LA, and he gets pulled into this investigation because he works as a detective. And... It's got things about Hitler porn and all sorts in. It's a lovely, great title. The art is done by J.H. Williams, who did Promethea. So the art, it can change from page to page. You get like these beautiful paintings done with your traditional artwork. And it's just a great book, and it's got some brilliant female characters in it, which is always top of my list.
I think, did Ellis say that Williams is alternating the art with other folks?
I think he did for the next run. Because originally it was going to be a different artist each book, each issue.
Okay.
But then it's like William stuck with this, so...
Oh, good. Okay.
And you want my other one?
Alrighty.
Buy it. Astonishing X-Men.
Ooh, yay.
I already am.
Jolly good, because this is the only X title I read.
Really?
Good idea.
Actually, you know what?
The rest are too bogged down.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, you know what? If there is one other X title that you should pick up, when Ed Brubaker starts writing Uncanny, that might be something to pick up. But
now, I do not want to take anything away from Astonishing X-Men, so I don't want Amy to lose her train of thought. But so I'll wait until we wrap this up, because here's another benefit I have of my comic shop. So I'll wait until we're all done with the reviews.
Okie dokie.
Okay. I think we're on issue 15 will be coming out this month, so it's easy for people to get hold of 13 and 14, and they've just released a full trade of all 12 issues, whereas before you had two-part trades. So it's easy for people to pick up, and it's good. It's just got some great moments in it, and it's just how I remember X-Men cartoon series in the 90s almost, with the one-liners by Wolverine and the bit of action and the bit of romance and the bits when you're just screaming, "You cow!" and stuff. And it's just, you know, it's like Emma Frost in it. It's just, I end up swearing in every issue so far because of her.
Emma's great.
Yeah.
well, that's the best thing about her. She's the only member of the team other than Wolverine with a mouth to her, you know?
Yeah.
And the fights that her and Kitty get into are just beautiful.
They're brilliant.
They really are.
That's true. And I'm always rooting for Kitty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you just want Emma to keep pushing because you just love... It's Josh Whedon, and I'm a huge Buffy fan.
Mm-hmm.
I can pretty much quote Buffy off pat, just name the episode. But so you know you're getting good dialogue. You know that when you're reading it, he... hears it in his head, and that if he could, I'm sure he'd make it into a TV series, and he'd do it well.
Well, that would be interesting. I'd like to see a weekly X-Men series written by Joss Whedon. In fact, yeah, let's do that. Let's do that right now. Let's sign him to a contract. Now, I can't wait to see his Wonder Woman. Also, I'm sure that's going to be a great movie, definitely, without a doubt. David, what are your buy it, trade it, and quarter bin of the week?
Well, I'll go ahead with, for this episode, I'll say The Road to Civil War, The New Avengers Illuminati. I don't think I can call this an actual buy it. I don't know if I could see it being in a trade, but it's definitely better than something that you'd find in a quarter bin. So I do recommend it. You should read it. I felt, since it's been a while since I've been so up to date on my mainstream comics reading, so this is pretty much one of the newest books that I've read, even if it is a month or two old. The writer is Brian Michael Bendis, which should shock no one since it's a Marvel comic. Alex Maleev is the artist. Dave Stewart did the colors. Chris, our friend from CGS, did the letters. And it is a nice setup, I think, to Civil War. There are a couple of things in here that I wasn't real keen on the way it was put into the comic book. The art's not bad. I have yet to read a Daredevil written by Bendis or drawn by Alex Maleev, so I haven't really been too familiar with Maleev's work. The art isn't too bad. I do like it. It's not flashy. It's very Vertigo-ish, I think. And Namor's never been a bigger prick, and I love it. The way some of the things come about, it's like, okay, fine, I can kind of believe that these six people all got together since, actually, it takes place, when they first get together to meet, it takes place before, right around when the all-new, all-different X-Men first came into play, because one of the first things that they decide to talk about, Professor X says that there is a problem, that there's an island in the South Pacific called Krakoa that he wants to talk about, and that was one of the new X-Men's first adventures, was against this island. And also it takes place after the Kree-Skrull Wars when they first decide to get together. So, you know, I can kind of believe that these people have been around since the 70s, sitting around just getting away from, you know, Reed Richards getting away from Sue for a couple hours and going to talk to these people, and Iron Man taking off from the Avengers for a little while and so on. But the way they kind of just try to shoehorn a couple of things in here, like getting rid of the Hulk, it's like, okay, fine. They send Hulk up to the satellite. Okay, psych, you're now going somewhere else. And then we cut to something else where it's about, you know, it takes place after the House of M, and it's and Tony Stark is introducing to the heroes this superhero registration act. So it's just kind of like, is okay, we had a couple of pages with the Hulk, or actually we had a page with Bruce Banner and then the Hulk, and then now if you want to know what happened to the Hulk, now go read Planet Hulk. So that kind of left me a little blah. But I did enjoy seeing these guys get together. I enjoyed Namor. I enjoyed, you know, seeing Black Bolt do some sign language. It was just, it's a good book. It's a nice setup, but parts of it just left me a little flat. That is that. And the other one that I just want to mention real quick is Scar Tissue, basically the first three issues.
Yay.
These three issues I have signed by the artist, Dave Wachter, who was nice enough to send them to me since I was silly enough to actually know the answer to a contest he posted. I've enjoyed what I've read so far. It's a great series. I can't wait to see where it's going. The writer is J. Andrew Clark, and colors are by Dave's brother, Brent. And I was flipping through issue 3 today after reading the first two, and I don't know how much time passed between 2 and 3 as far as when they hit the streets, because as far as the story goes, they take place one after the other, but I don't know how many months it took for issues 2 and 3 to actually hit the streets. His art has improved by leaps and bounds just with these first three issues.
I agree with that definitely.
His line work has gotten a lot better, and it was good to begin with, and just, I was flipping through issue 3, and I'm looking at a couple of pages, and I'm just like, wow, this is such a nice, clean line. And the colors are great. These are the colored versions. I am going to hunt down issue 4. I don't know if they announced that it was ready yet, or if maybe I'll wait till August if I do go out to Wizard World Chicago, and I'll just get them right from Dave there. But it's a nice story. It's unique. I enjoy the take on, you know, it's about a person who's always had a heart problem. They decide to give him a new heart, and turns out that the heart is from a supervillain that just recently died. And you know, with a heart comes, I guess, great powers, to paraphrase Spidey. I'm going to reread the first three issues only because I want to soak it in a lot more. I don't want to just, you know, it's well worth seeking out, and it's not something that you should just read once and then, okay, put it down. There's a lot in there to soak in, so something I highly recommend it. So that's a buy it.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. And Dave does a great job, and he's a friend of the show and CGS and everybody, and he's a great guy. Definitely support him. Pick up Scar Tissue. It's well worth it.
Yes.
All right. My turn, my buy it, trade it, or quarter bin of the week. I'm going to start things off with the entire run of the century, because it's hard to really do one issue at a time here, and that's issues 1 through 8. It's a miniseries that was put out, which is supposed to go directly off of the New Avengers storyline, which involved the reintroduction of the century and all the stuff that happened in there. This was written by the original writer of Century, which is Paul Jenkins, and the art, beautiful art by John Romita Jr., and I'll get the rest of the information here. The inker, Mark Morales, the colorist, Dean White, and the letterer, Joe Caramaga. I'm sure I mispronounced that. But, you know, it's an interesting series, but I would have really have rather seen this as a trade in the first place. This is going to be a trade for me because it seemed every single issue was so part of the story that if you just randomly went into the comic book shop and picked up, let's say, issue 5 of this 8-issue miniseries, you would have had absolutely no idea what the hell was going on. Every issue, something happened that changed the status quo significantly. One issue, he'd find out his origin, and the next issue, he'd find out his origin again, only it would be different. And then all of a sudden, he's nuts in a mental institution, and he's not really a superhero, and the entire Marvel Universe doesn't exist, and, oh, wait, never mind, we changed our minds, he's back to being the Sentry again, and he's trying to hunt down the Void, who might be him, who might be a part of him, but not really. It's so complicated that you need to read the entire thing at once. Because even trying to remember the entire storyline right now off the top of my head, and I've been collecting every single issue, it is hard for me to do so. So I would definitely put this in the trade bin. Read it, though, if you're interested in the Sentry, if you're interested in New Avengers, because it does explain the character a lot. But the character we saw in New Avengers doesn't even seem like the character we're seeing here, which is kind of odd, because they set it up perfectly. Even Paul Jenkins was in that issue of New Avengers, which was a great twist, I gotta say. You know, having Paul Jenkins, you know, be in that issue was interesting, very, very interesting at that. But I don't know, you gotta trade this, you gotta pick it up yourself and figure it out, and maybe you'll understand it a bit more than I did. The other issue that I'm gonna review here is something that we discussed earlier, and that, of course, is Spider-Girl. I have been picking up Spider-Girl since the What If issue that first introduced her. I am a huge fan of the character. Spider-Girl's been written by Tom DeFalco this entire run, and Ron Frenz has been doing the art ever since Pat O'Leaf left, and Ron Frenz was actually the one who did the art for the original What If story, so he's been a fan of the character for a long time now, helped introduce her. The art finishes are by Sal Buscema. Emeritus, as they write here, which is kind of odd. Pat O'Leaf and Al Williamson, which are the originals. The colorist is Gotham, and the letterer is VC's Dave Sharp. What's being introduced in this issue is that Kane, a character that was introduced back in the 90s run of Spider-Man, has been having these visions of Spider-Girl being killed by the Scryers. And the Scryers are this group of really crazed psychopaths who have been around again since the 90s. And that's what I like about this book the most, is the fact that they don't forget that the 90s happened. You know, you look at Spider-Man issues now, and everybody has completely forgotten that from, like, 1993 until the year 2000 ever happened, you know? There was never a clone, there was never any of that crazy stuff. All of a sudden, Peter Parker just woke up from a dream, and that was it, you know? This is his life, as, you know, if the 90s actually stayed in canon. And for me, this is almost as if this is the real continuation of those Spider-Man issues. Spider-Girl is a wonderful character. They reintroduce the Hobgoblin in this, which actually is the original Hobgoblin, not Leeds, the original guy who was supposed to be the Hobgoblin. And he's basically hunting down members of Spider-Girl's extended family, which, of course, are the Warriors, which are the Green Goblin, and Norman Osborn, who is now bonded to the Venom symbiote. Normie Osborn, that is, not Norman. Norman's long dead. And a couple other people involved here. He's basically just trying to track down her extended family to try and get to her. And it's a very brutal issue for Spider-Girl. It's very different than the usual light tone, but it works because she's in her black outfit in this, which makes sense. All in all, I love the family dynamic between Peter and May and Mary Jane and the new baby and all that. Everything's wonderful here. It's definitely a buy-it. You don't need to pick up previous issues because it's all explained in the previously page. And this is a great title, and I'm sad to see it go. Hopefully it will get picked up in a relaunch or something along those lines. But pick up Spider-Girl number 98.
Excellent.
All right. And, David, you had some comments you wanted to make about Astonishing?
Well, no, not about Astonishing. You were saying, and you and Chris from Around Comics and probably Sal are going to pick up Uncanny X-Men when Ed Brubaker starts it. And I'm on the fence because, okay, yeah, great. It's Ed Brubaker. I'm intrigued. I'm not sure how I'm feeling about the art just yet because I'm also hesitant to get too involved into any new story if I know that the artist is going to, you know, need a fill-in after issue 4. So that's always a peeve of mine. But yeah. I'm looking, okay, Uncanny X-Men 475, 476 from the latest Marvel previews. Rise and Fall of the Shi'ar Empire Parts 1 and 2. Brand New Era, Begins here, fresh off X-Men Deadly Genesis. Ed Brubaker takes the helm of Marvel's Mighty Mutants. Billy Tan joins Ed for a story that won't just affect Earth, but will rock the foundations of the entire galaxy. Vulcan is out for revenge, and he has his sights set on the Shi'ar Empire. Get ready for the ride of your life. A perfect starting point for any new reader. And I'm thinking, okay, yeah, that sounds so neat. And then I look at the team. And this team consists of Professor X, Nightcrawler, Havoc, Polaris, Warpath, and Marvel Girl. And that's it. And I'm just, that's leaving me a little underwhelmed. And you know what? And Ed Brubaker might have said, you know what? Give me just, you know, give me Nightcrawler, give me Professor X, and then, you know, and then I'll make something work with these other guys. And I mean, that maybe that's what happened, and that's why he's working with this team. It sounds interesting, but this team is not exactly, you know, instilling too much greatness for me right now. So I'm not real sure if I'm even going to bother with this as something else for me to pick up and be and buy and read.
It's nice to see Warpath back in the book, though. You know, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who knows? I mean, I'll tell you this. Put it this way. I'll pick up the first couple issues. I'll let you know how it is. I'll let you know whether it's a buy it or not. How about that?
Okay, that'll work. But so as of right now, I agree with Amy, where Astonishing is really the only X-Men book anybody needs to read. But as far as my shop goes, not to say that I couldn't get previews in White Plains, and I did, but it wasn't. Because I was at the shop so infrequently, I didn't go by previews as the Bible as to what was coming out. If a book came out, I have my list on my PDA. I know what I have up to date. So if I go in there after a couple of months, I know what are the last books I bought, and I know what I have to get now. So if I have anything missing, A, it's my own fault for taking so damn long to get in there, and I don't fault them. And even though I have a pull list, I do not fault them for having to take something out of my box to give to a customer that's going to buy it right then and there right now, because it may be a couple of weeks before they see me, and it's not right for me to have them hold on to my books for so long. So I'm cool with that. One of the advantages of this shop is 10% off on new books, 10% off on anything you order from previews, be them statues or books or movies or anything like that. Free previews and free bags and boards with your comics. So I'm going to be using previews again, and I printed up the order form, and I'm going to just do one more run, because even though the order was due this past week on the 15th, since I was there on Tuesday, the day after, he said to, he gave me the previews, he told me to go home and check off a couple of things, and for the most part, I do have some indie titles on there, but anything, I don't know how many of each mainstream issue he gets. So I do have a few things checked off on there from Marvel and DC that I still have to get to him. So my buying habits aren't going to change too much, but my reading habits are definitely going to change, where I'll now be more up to date on what's going on out there, because, you know, I just found out Barry Allen Flash died. I mean, it's been so long since I read a comic that, you know, actually came out within that week. And again, that's my own fault, but at least now I'll be able to do that. But because of the benefit of the of being a subscriber at this shop, I have my previews. I'll be able to go ahead and actually be more well-rounded in what it is that I do want to look at. I mean, I've never judged a book by its cover, but I'm not going to do that again now. And I just I'm happy to know that before, if somebody said, "Hey, Ed Brubaker's going to write a new X-Men comic," you know what? I was almost 99% sure that I'd say, hey, I'm there. But now, after knowing where he's taking it and who he's taking to go there, now I'm not so sure. So, again, you know, yeah. I mean, at least I knew that. And thanks to the shop, it's because of that.
And,
so
and this just in, hate to tell you, man, Jean Grey's dead again, you know?
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know. Oh, man. Well, going on to wrapping up the show here, we got our first email. Yay.
Oh, excellent.
Excellent. We got an email from Chris G., who actually found us because of the Raging Bullets podcast crossover that we just did. And here's what,
here's
what he has to say. Hey, Toby, Ian, and David, I'm loving the show so far. I'm a huge Raging Bullets podcast fan, so I tried out your podcast because of Sean and Jim being on. I loved episode 3A and can't wait for episode 3B, which actually just got released a little while ago. Also, I checked out your earlier episodes and have really enjoyed them, so definitely count me in as a new fan. I guess he liked my clairvoyance in episode 2A.
if that didn't turn him off, then shoot.
Oh, yeah. Just thought I'd mention also that Toby's voice seems distorted at times in each episode while everyone else seems fine. And again, as you're probably hearing now, Toby's mic problems will hopefully be fixed by the next time he's on, as he's buying himself a new mic, so hopefully he'll be back here soon. Well, keep up the great work, and Toby, watch out for that wire. Chris from Canada.
Thanks, Chris.
Yep, and he's from Canada, which means that our listenership is multinational, to say the least. So
that's right.
Yeah. Well, I listen.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
It. They were all of this.
Oh yeah. And we're up to about 78 subscribers. That was our most subscribers so far, which definitely means thanks a lot for everybody who's listening. And as of this episode, we are members of the Comics Podcast Network.
Fabulous.
Yes, indeed. So you can head on over to comicspodcast.com. That is for all the guys who are part of the Comics Podcast Network, playing a great comic podcast on there. Also, you can find us over at Podcast Alley. The link will be in the show notes. And don't forget to give us your iTunes reviews if you so desire. Just click on iTunes and give us a review over there. And you can email us over at comictiming@gmail.com. And also, just a reminder, the most recent episode of Geek Speak actually has to do a bit with comics trips, that is, as I had an interview with Doug Bratton of the Pop Culture Shock Therapy comic. So if anybody's interested over there, you can head over to speakgeekspeak.com. That's the latest episode on there, episode 36, so give it a listen. And other than that, Amy, thanks for joining us.
No problem. And nice being here.
Glad to have you, and you'll be back for the next episode as well. And I want to thank David for joining us, as always.
My pleasure.
And as always, there's always time for comics. Take care, everybody.
First full time I've actually sat on an episode.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Woohoo.
Oh, we'll be in that. We'll be promoting the hell out of that.
Oh, you're damn right. You're damn right.
We have Little Witch.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
We have her, and we're not letting her go. No.
You can finally do Tea with the Queen, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. There we go. Finally.
It's your tagline.
Oh, man.
I actually do have a cup of tea with me, so.
Oh, excellent.
I left my water downstairs, Dave.
Now, is there milk in there?
Of course. You have to ask.
And as the phone rings, I'll stop the recording.